2008's CFI of the Year on how he keeps up with glass panel technology. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Max Trescott, who, among his many other pursuits, is now officially... Last time we talked to Max, he was only the CFI of the Year in waiting. Now Max is officially, having been awarded Thursday night at AirVenture, the 2008 National CFI of the Year. Max has taken a few moments out from his busy schedule now as a head of state to come join us today. Max, how you doing?
I am having the time of my life. All I can say is there's nothing more fun than winning an award like this, because my schedule has been so much fun you wouldn't believe it.
I wanted to start out by talking to you a little bit about CFI of the Year. Do you have a little more fleshed out picture now of what it means to have received this award?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can tell you candidly, I was not selected because I am the best CFI in the year. There are many folks I'm sure who are better than I, and I learn so much on a daily basis from other CFIs. But really, I'm just representing the 92,000 CFIs out there in the country, and you know, hopefully bring a little additional visibility to the CFI community. And I got to tell you, there's nothing that makes me prouder to do that, because these folks, they really are the backbone of our industry. I mean, think about it. There's no one who's achieved a major objective in flying without having a CFI, you know, helping them get there. So I think that these folks are really the unsung heroes. And, you know, the amazing thing is we have a shortage of CFI. So, you know, I'm hoping that as people hear about CFI of the Year, they'll think about, oh, wow, you know, maybe I should become a CFI and have as much fun as Max is having.
Well, where are the shortages? Because it seems as though there are clusters of too many flight schools. I mean, you see them up against each other at some airports, and then other places where you hear people having a hard time finding anybody.
It's a really good question. I'm sure it's a little bit unevenly distributed, and the picture has probably changed a little bit in recent months, and so I don't have any good hard firm numbers, whereas you know, a year ago I knew that there was a shortage of approximately 4,000 CFIs in the U.S., and my guess is with some of the layoffs at the major airlines and so on, that you know, that picture has eased a little bit. So yeah, it's going to vary a little bit. I'll tell you where probably the biggest shortage is, I think, is really at the high end. So folks who have invested the time to learn how to fly glass cockpit aircraft. I still from time to time hear owners talking about, gee, you know, I'm teaching the guy in the right seat how to fly my airplane. And, you know, that's not exactly the way things should be. So I think the big challenges CFIs are facing right now is just keeping up with all the technology and investing the time they need to be able to truly help their customers, particularly at the high end. And actually, you know what, to some extent at the low end as well, because I'm constantly hearing people, oh, that sounds great. You hear the roar of that in the background? Hopefully it's one of ours. Anyway, that's the fun thing about Oshkosh, always something fun flying by. But also at the low end, I constantly hear people say that they're interested in sport pilot, and I constantly hear the majority of CFI saying, well, gee, you know, I don't know anything about that. So I think it's incumbent upon all of us to constantly keep upgrading our education, both on the high end and the low end, particularly as the market seems to split a little bit much more than it has in the past.
One of the problems I recently became aware of that I hadn't thought about before, but it makes perfect sense, is that there seems to be a shortage of designated airworthiness representatives who are up to speed on glass cockpits. And part of their problem, obviously, is that there are enough variations between the Garmin G1000-based setups in a number of different manufacturers' planes that you'd stay very busy just keeping proficient and current in all of them.
Yeah, indeed. And that was, frankly, one of the key assets buried in the back of my book is a table that shows all the differences between all the different manufacturers and their implementations of the G1000. So it's a constant battle for me as I hop from one airplane to another to kind of remember, oh, yeah, this is that version of the software. It will do that, but it won't do that. And I jump into another airplane with a G1000 but with a different autopilot, and it's, oh, yeah, different, you know, combination. So, yeah, it's a challenge to keep up with all of it. The good news is, you know, that the base is probably 98% the same between all of these. So it's really just kind of a question of trying to remember the differences. But you're right in terms of the FAA and other communities trying to keep up with this stuff. I know that in my local FISDO that they're looking to convene a group of folks to help provide guidance to our designated pilot examiners as to what they should be doing when they're out there giving exams in glass cockpits, and what is the best practice for failing an instrument and so on. So yeah, people are continually working and trying to evolve to figure out how do we make the best use of this new technology in all walks of aviation.
We're here with Max Trescott, our 2008 National CFI of the Year, and I'm Paul Plack. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Cirrus Design. It's in our DNA makeup to not remain status quo. Enter Cirrus Vision SJ50, our latest addition to the family. Keeping true to the Cirrus heritage, the Vision has everything you would expect from Cirrus. You cannot help but notice the family resemblance, taken to a new level. Innovative, technologically advanced, yet simple enough to fly. And talk about ramp appeal. We'd love to introduce you to our newest member.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott, our 2008 National CFI of the Year. Max also does training in a couple of different forms for owners of the Garmin G1000 and its variants. And Max, it almost must be tough for you to keep up on this stuff now. We've got the Cirrus Perspective System, which you do have material available for now. And then there's SVT that suddenly popped up on the horizon. And now almost everybody's getting it. How big a challenge is this for you as someone who is in the training industry to keep yourself up to date on this stuff, let alone pass it on to others?
I'm not sure as much as the challenge as it is an opportunity and just a work of love. I mean, I got to tell you, there is nothing more fun than sinking your teeth into one of these new systems. So just to give you a quick outline of what I've been doing in the last 6-7 weeks, the Cirrus SR22 Perspective Glass Cockpit was announced around the 20th of May, thereabouts. Within a week or two, we decided, hey, we need to have some type of product out in this area. And I was very fortunate to be able to spend time with one of the demo pilots who has one of those aircraft. And then better yet, the flying club that I do most of my work with, the West Valley Flying Club in Palo Alto, has one of these aircraft online, and they asked me to help put together the program to check out the chief flight instructor and the other CFIs and so on. So I've had a lot of time in that aircraft now over the last month or so. And so, you work 24/7, but it's a work of love. You're having a good time. And, the wonderful thing about this is we're not just throwing technology at something for the sake of throwing technology at it. A lot of these innovations that you find, like in the Perspective, for example, really provide real value to people. And so it's just heartening to see that things are getting better and better and better, and kind of wonder where the end in sight's going to be. You think someday we may find limits to how much value we can add, but I can tell you right now, the new stuff going into the glass cockpits is fantastic. It's really helpful and useful, and people should try it out because they're going to love it.
The little blue level button, is it a gimmick or going to really help people?
I think it probably will help people. I've enjoyed trying it, and I'll just give you a description of what I've done. The it will operate between a pitch attitude of plus and minus, I believe it's 50 degrees, and a bank angle of 75 degrees. Now, you don't want to go to those limits because that would be in the aerobatic category, and the airplane is not certified for that, but it will operate within those limits. So I've dropped the nose down at some descent rate that I still feel very comfortable at, push the button, and watch what happens. And essentially, it starts to level the wings, and it does so over a period of a few seconds, so it's not at all a dramatic whip-stall kind of aerobatic maneuver. And then the nose starts to gradually pitch back up to the level. And I would say, and I haven't timed it, but maybe over the course of 7-8 seconds, you've gone from the unusual attitude that you've created to straight and level. And in the course of that, maybe you've lost 400 feet if you were starting nose down. I think it's going to really give pilots one more option. In the past, if shoot happens, right, you end up having to pull that big red lever on the top. And now I think people have one more option. They can push before they pull, so they can push that blue LVL key, and if that saves them, great, and if not, well, they still have yet another option. So I think it's a great innovation.
All right, let's talk about synthetic vision technology. And now that Avidyne's come out with enhanced IR-based enhanced vision to go with SVT, an SVT-like system, I'm sure this bar is going to get raised even higher by next Oshkosh. Is SVT a meaningful addition to this system for the typical private pilot?
That's a good question. You could almost ask, gee, is glass, you know, beneficial to the typical private pilot? And let's just generalize from that case. You know, if you're you know, staying in the pattern, or if you're flying to another airport, you know, a very short hop away, you're really not going to realize the benefits of glass. Glass, I think, really shines on you know, cross-country trips. You know, you're going 40, 50, 100, you know, however many miles away. Particularly shines in IFR. You know, if you're just hanging out, you know, plus or minus 15 miles of the airport, nah, you're not really going to derive all the wonderful benefits, unless you're in an incredibly densely populated area where you've got airplanes everywhere, and yeah, then you really, you know, really need the traffic. I think SVT is similar. They're going to be kind of a base level where, nah, it's not going to add that much for in certain areas. It really does shine in a number of areas. For example, I was impressed on takeoff to see the stripes of the runway rolling away, not out the front window, but also, you know, on the screen in front of me. And if you're doing a low visibility night takeoff, you know, I think that's going to be really great to be able to see exactly where the, you know, the runway is located. Another interesting thing, I was checking someone out in the Cirrus SR-22, about a week, 10 days ago, and gentleman's first time in a SR-22. And his first steep turn was kind of, you know, wouldn't have met PTS standards, let's put it that way, right, which is not unusual. I mean, people just don't go out and practice steep turns every day, so the first one, you know, may not be the best. And I pointed out to him to the flight path pointer, a little circle in the middle of the SVT, and I said, just hold that on the white line that you see in the center. Next turnaround, plus or minus 10 feet. So, yeah, so there are some features in there which, you know, depending upon the phase of flight you're in, really are incredibly helpful in terms of, you know, helping you maneuver the airplane.
You know, you mentioned briefly the one circumstance which, in my experience, I could see myself benefiting tremendously from having this technology, and that is for occasional VFR pilots who find themselves out at night. I know that still remains an area where we have a disproportionate number of people who take off, make unplanned landings.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, I think the you know, the terrain capability, the where you can actually see that in graphic relief is outstanding. And by the way, I just flew through your hometown of Salt Lake City on a 4-day cross-country trip in a Diamond DA-40 with synthetic vision about 2 weeks ago. And as we were departing from Salt Lake International, we did the I-80 transition to the west. We came up on that little tower up against the base of that great big hill there, and it was fascinating to watch this great big huge red description of a tower go by on the PFD. Couldn't miss it. Of course, we had clear visibility and couldn't miss the real tower either. But yeah, I think things like that are going to really help folks in limited conditions. For example, I have been flying in ridiculously dense smoke in Northern California for the last 6 to 7 weeks. We have the worst fire season we have ever had, and it's solid smoke for hundreds of miles and up to, you know, 10,000 feet. And things like that really help make you feel comfortable when you're flying around in, you know, marginal conditions.
Well, what's new in the world of Max Trescott before we get out of here? What are you working on? What can we look forward to on your website?
Well, I'm doing the same thing you're doing this week, which is doing a lot of writing and letting people know about all the great things that are, you know, going on here at Oshkosh. Which, and for folks out there listening who have never been to Oshkosh, you got to put it on your bucket list.
Yeah.
In fact, I would put it on your list for next year, because when you get here, you're going to find out, oh, I should have been here last year and the year before, and you want to be here for every year in the future. So just start blocking that off, you know, on your calendar. So for me, it's more the same. You know, I spend 5 days a week teaching flying, and I spend the other 5 days a week working on my publishing business. So it's a 24/7, you know, engagement with aviation, and I'm loving it. And I'm having the time of my life, as I'm sure you are too.
Well, I know it's been fun to watch this roll out, because, you know, EAA started out, or Air Venture, what is now called Air Venture, started out more than a half century ago is a gathering of a few home builders in a grass field, right, and now it's grown to this. And it dawned on me just how far this has come and just how immense this event is when Richard Branson and Dick Rattan announced that the first commercial flight made by Spaceship Two will originate from Whitman Field during Oshkosh. They actually said that the first time they do that for money will be right here. And Bert Rattan even said that they're going to make six new astronauts right here at Oshkosh whatever year that's ready. To me, that's an immense testimony to what this event has become.
Well, and let me just share another little thing along those lines as well. As part of my award package, if you will, for CFI of the Year, I was invited to the EAA President's Barbecue last night, and that was really fabulous. And I ended up sitting right next to a couple people named Clapmire at the table, and found out that Alan and Dale came to their first Oshkosh by themselves as teenagers 32 years ago. And so you just kind of look at, wow, the seeds that get planted in people at a very early age and the results that spring from that. So, I just can't wait to find out 10 and 15 years from now what fantastic innovations we're going to have then that occurred from people who are wandering around the flight line at night here, just, being inspired by the lumbering giants that, that dwarf this, this flight line here. So Oshkosh, as I noticed last night on the sign, they call it the world's greatest aviation celebration. And I can't think of a better word. That's exactly what we're all doing here, I think, is celebrating aviation all week long.
Well, Max, it's always fun to catch up with you. Your blog makes fun reading, and we direct our listeners to maxtrescott.com. And we look forward to any chance we get to talk to you. Thanks for taking a few minutes out.
Paul, it's always a pleasure. Great to see you again, too.
You've been listening to an Aero News special feature. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.